Hello, everybody, and welcome to eTech Muddy Boots, where we don't just talk about it, we stomp right through it. I'm your host, Melissa, and this is the show that gets down and dirty with everyday leaders who are making real change happen. We're not afraid to get our boots muddy because that's where the real stories are. So lace up, slip them on, step out, and join us as we trudge through the trenches of trust building and action taking, real action taking. If you are tired of all the talk and no walk, you're in the right spot. So let's get your boots ready. Let's lace up. Let's get muddy. Hello and welcome to Melissa's Muddy Boots. This is an eTech ETS Labs podcast where we don't talk about leadership. We talk to the people who actually do it. You know, the ones that actually get their boots muddy and then don't just look at other people doing the work. And that is what we're doing today. And this show isn't about people that just talk about leadership. It's the ones who live it, who actually live it. And that's what this podcast is for. So if you just want to talk theory and what you could and would do in leadership, that's probably a different podcast. This one is for the ones who are stomping right through the mud, who actually have made the hard decisions and had to stay around and deal with the decisions, right? And work the team through it. So that brings me to today's topic. It's the next leadership shift. That's kind of a tongue twister. I think they were trying to get me to say a bad word. But it's basically how you lead in the age of AI. And I've got a guy here today, Mr. Matthew Jarratt. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Melissa. So good to see you.
Hey, today, Matthew, he's got his boots muddy. I can definitely guarantee you. He's going to walk us through, really, all this leadership shift, right? How we're supposed to and prepare our minds, our hearts, and our actions for measurable impact.
And Matthew, our boots.
Yeah, and those boots. Matthew, you didn't know when you met this Texas girl in Arizona, I was going to have you on boots all so fast, did you?
I got to tell you, I have to tell the audience the story. So we met at the Call Center Campus Conference in Phoenix in May.
Yeah.
We had never met.
Never.
You had the opening presentation on the first day, and then I had the hands-on session at the end of the first day, and then the beginning and the opening act of the second day. You remember the first thing I said to you after your presentation?
No.
Had never met. I just came up to you and I asked and I said something to you. Do you remember that?
You were complimenting me and made me feel a little uncomfortable because I was already so nervous.
No. I said, it's as though you and I had planned this whole thing because your presentation literally set the stage for mine.
Yeah.
It's as though we just worked it out. It was amazing.
In your session, I've never used my post-it notes so much in my entire life. That was the most interactive session. I had a blast at it. And you know what, Matthew? I didn't see anybody get up during your session and leave. You know, that's big in
your
world.
Session either. Although I will say this, at the end of this, there will be no singing. And if you know, you know.
You know. And I will say, look at the balloons. He's all ready to go on stage. If you know, you know. You never know what's going to happen when you're on the Muddy Boots series.
Nope,
you never
singing.
Know. Well, let me tell you a little. Matthew knows about himself, but maybe our audience doesn't. Matthew is a leader at Amazon Web Services. He's a customer solutions manager, also an AI customer experience leader. Okay, so this is why, not just that title, but what he's done in those roles and all these roles he's had beforehand. I'll link his bio in the description so that you can go read how awesome my new friend Matthew Jarratt is. And you can see that he walks people. He turns complex technical challenges. I've read this about you, about turning complex technical challenges into measurable business outcomes. If that's not muddy, nothing is, right? You are so brilliant. You are so brilliant. And the way you can take something so complex and make it so actionable, I want to say to you, even in my first time to meet you, I was in awe about that. And I don't care if one person signs on this podcast. I'm just happy to see you today and hear what you have to say about the future of leadership.
I got to tell you. So thank you, Melissa, but you're buttering me up. But I got to tell you this. I'm really appreciative of your invitation to come on this podcast. I'm honored, but I got to tell you, I've got a little bit of an imposter syndrome because I listened to some of the previous podcasts. Your guests are like so accomplished. They've written books. They've led, I don't know, global practices. Yeah. They've healed the sick in the desert or whatever. Like, they're all so accomplished. And then there's me.
No, so, there's not just you. Let me say
I appreciate being here.
We don't stomp in the mud with just anybody. We're not here for the talkers. We're here for the doers, okay? So that's that other, those other podcasts. You know, I call them the consultant podcasts. I'm talking to the people who actually do the work, and that is you 100%. I have to say this, in researching a little bit about you and your organization and your department, Matthew, I ran across Dr. Swami. I guess he's your VP of your specific area, right? And I have to, I don't know if you can carry this message back to him or if this definitely is going to help our podcasters listening.
He Pick opened up.
Oh, is he on the phone? Okay.
sure. Here.
Just call him.
I'll dial him in. He can just listen.
Just text him. Just text him. But I want to, he challenged me. One, he was very clear. He opened up, I guess you guys had a summit in New York, in 2026. I couldn't get the date of when that was, but he was very clear. I love clarity. And when he walked on stage, he very clearly said this, our job, that's Matthew's job, right? So I want to be, this ties into what, you're talking about, the next leadership shift is our job is to remove every barrier between imagination and what you can do. And I thought, how crystal clear. And that's exactly, I mean, you've taken that and that's what you've done with it. He also opened up with that really cool video. Tell him I need that. But I don't know if you were you at that New York?
No, summit? But I know what you're talking about.
It is phenomenal. It says, the question isn't, is it possible? It's why not? And I took notes. So, Dr. Swami, if you're listening, which I know you are, because you would not miss anything that Matthew Gerard, the most wonderful leader on your team, would be having to say today. But he said, why not take your shot? Find power in people. Why not turn data into ideas? Why not be relentlessly curious? And you were challenging us that in Phoenix. And externally gutsy, why not choose action over permission? I think he just gave you permission. And why not develop more? Why not imagine more? And why not push past the possible? So I wrote notes down, Matthew. I just said, for my homework from Dr. Swami, is what is standing in the way between you and the desired outcome that you need to get to, not in weeks, but in days. So that is...
I got to tell you, Dr. Swami is a respected, amazing leader at AWS.
Yeah.
And in fact, what you just mentioned is kind of almost our mantra in the sense that at AWS, and especially at Amazon in general, it's not a... make a choice between this or that. We always think of it as this and that.
Okay.
We'll try to find a way to make that work. And he's at the forefront of all of that.
That is, I guess we would call him Mr. Miyagi, but that you're Danielson working under that umbrella. And I just wanted our podcasters to, wax on, wax off, Matthew. But I wanted our podcasters to understand that Amazon Web Services, you guys are, you're big anyway, but just the power of the leadership mindset, and that is driven with you as well, or you would not be on this team. So let's get into all these questions about leadership that I know our podcasters have been having. Some have sent me some of these questions. So let's start with this. What does leadership require today, you know, that may not have been as critical 5 or 10 years ago in the age of cloud and AI and all these things? So what does it require today?
I'm sorry. Let me turn off my notifications.
Oh, that's your, is that your totally, key to sing? Was that your little music?
It's for Swami trying to, Swami, to get in here.
Would you let him talk to Melissa for just a minute? We're trying to stomp in the mud together. So tell us, what do leaders need today that they didn't need 5 or 10 years ago?
So here's the thing. First of all, hat off to you for starting off this thing with some fighting words out of the gate, Melissa. Obviously, you're not wasting any time. So here's the thing. 5-10 years ago, a leader's job was to set a direction, build a plan, rally the troops, and then execute against that plan. That was literally what it was. The business world back then, I don't want to say compared to now, was slower, but moved in a much more predictable way that you could actually chart a course for the next 12 months, 18 months, 24 months.
True.
And in a way, largely, I would say, trust that it would hold. Okay. Yes, there were market disruptors that changed your plans and you had to kind of adjust to that and adapt to them. But nevertheless, there was much more stability. Do you agree?
I agree.
That era is over forever. Now, what leadership requires today, and this is not a revelation, I'm not saying anything that nobody knows here, is this unbelievable ability to operate in this consistent state of ambiguity without losing your SHIT. Can I say that?
Yeah.
On your
podcast? Yeah, you can spell it out. Go ahead.
Right. So without losing your focus or momentum, let's just say that. You need enough clarity to keep the company and the people moving forward. But then you also need to do this constant course correction because the landscape, can you see that? Yeah, there we go. The landscape where we're walking, like literally underneath our feet is shifting in real time.
It is. Every day something new's coming out for a leader in this world of AI, something new that their agents can do, something new that their boss can do.
It's impossible to keep up with.
Yeah.
It's absolutely impossible to keep up with, right? But here's the thing. Speaking of Dr. Swami, but Amazon in general, at Amazon, we use a phrase that has pretty much withstood the test of time, and that is be stubborn on the vision and flexible on the details. So like that's literally the posture. You hold firm on the destination and the vision, but you let go of any illusion that you have in terms of how exactly you're going to get there.
Love that.
I'll give you an analogy.
Okay.
Think of it as, you're sitting you're in your car going down the freeway. Picture you have like a straight shot and you're on cruise control. You constantly make these tiny adjustments on the steering wheel to stay on course. Because if you didn't touch the steering wheel for a while, either you end up in a ditch or you have to make a really large, uncomfortable correction. And that's really what the leaders need to do these days. They need to make these frequent, small, precision type of bets, and not with that sort of outside of the usual multi-year, like 2-3 year roadmap that lives in some beautiful PowerPoint that has really no value.
That is. I want to go ahead and let everybody know he's going to plant things in your mind that when you leave, you walk away with and you're repeating later. You've taught me about the pizza meetings, and I have just been sharing that with our entire company. That's another podcast. I'm not going to tell all your secrets, but this visual of a long road and just the constant little corrections. The truth is, because this podcast is not about theory, the truth is I'm seeing leaders struggle because they're so used to 5 or 10 years ago when they put their actions in a PowerPoint or they thought their team could just run, right? But they're not on the floor active enough. And then when I say on the floor, I'm not just talking about a frontline leader. I'm talking about executive level. Like you can't set it and forget it. Right? Like a rotisserie chicken. Like there has to be, you have to be more engaged now at little small intervals, not long ones, but little small intervals. And I'm seeing, to be honest, Matthew, I'm seeing some leaders struggle with that. They need to completely shift their mind from the 10 years ago to what's needed from them today.
Yeah. You invoke the two pizza team, but something that sort of an Amazonian peculiar sort of perspective that I can bring here, at least to this conversation and to this question, is that at Amazon, we actually have a framework for this. It's called one-way door versus two-way door. And you might have actually, I might have even said it. I don't know.
You did. Okay. The one like building a data center. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. You actually did it.
I learned so much from you. I'm telling you, you are the person.
A one-way door is irreversible. It's high stakes. It's high cost. And once you go through that door, you're stuck with it for a while. Okay. Just like exactly as you said, just like building a data center. You don't just walk it back. It's involved. So, and because of that, for you to make those decisions, you have to slow down, you have to deliberate, you have to consult. You have to be careful before pulling the trigger. A two-way door is completely reversible. They're not high stakes. They're not high cost. You can move fast and you can try it, walk through it. And if it doesn't work out, you walk right back through that same door and then try something else. Okay? Most decisions in business are actually two-way doors. Because when you break those large business problems into their smaller constituents, you mm-hmm. end up with a lot of two-way doors. So when you treat a two-way door like it's a one-way door, that's where speed goes to die.
Yeah.
That's where innovation stops. So the best leaders are the ones who can sort of, let me say, calibrate their pace and approach accordingly, according to which door they're walking into.
You are executive coaching right now, my friend. You are executive coaching right now. We're seeing that. So podcasters, listen to me. Listen to what he's saying. Which one do you fall in? Because if where he said where speed goes to die, that if you treat everything like a one-way door where you're just having to be deliberate, you're consulting so many people, you're treating them like that one decision, like it's just the one-way door, like it's building a $75 million data center or something like that.
$75 million? That's no money. Are you kidding me? That was 10 years ago.
Yeah. So some people live in that world. They treat everything like a one-way door, right? So that's some of you. That's a good eye-opener right there. You can't be thinking, you can't go at that pace because innovation dies. I love how you said that. And then maybe podcasters, just look at yourself, look at me. If it is to be, it begins with me. Do you treat everything like a two-way door when it really isn't? Like some of these.
You meant one-way door.
Well, some people treat it like a one-way and some people treat every single thing like a two-way door, you know? And then it causes like major destruction because you didn't have the wisdom to understand that you can't walk that back through the other door. So kind of be looking at those. Okay, that leads me to my second point. There's got to be alignment created. You've got to build trust. You and I, we talked a little bit about trust while you're guiding three people through continuous change. So what can leaders do to create alignment and build trust in this world when you said the foundation is shifting constantly, right? And that's scary. You know, before it wasn't as hard, I don't think, but now the floor's changing, right? So how do you build alignment and trust for leaders when there's so much change and uncertainty? Tell us, please.
Yeah. So, great question. Because, speaking of how, momentum dies, the question that you just asked, this is actually exactly how transformation visions die.
Okay? Yeah.
Because it's almost never the technology. It's almost never the tools. It's almost always that gap between what the organization wants and what the people do. It's like that gap right there. So oftentimes the story goes something like this. And we all know the story. The executive team gets excited about some really cool technology. Maybe it's AI, okay? Or maybe like some transformation project. They announce it. They fund it. They expect it. 6 months down the road, they end up with an organization that is exhausted, a little bit confused. The people are quietly resisting, sometimes in some sort of, like, perhaps even in a cynical way.
Yeah.
Not because the strategy was wrong, but because no one bothered to close that gap between the vision and adoption. Okay? So the leaders have to keep that in mind. And I've got a couple of ideas here, but what do you think of that so far?
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving that. I know that just actually yesterday in our company at eTech and ETS Labs, we started an AI show and tell. So whatever we have actual, it doesn't matter what we had. Executive leadership doing a show and tell. We had a frontline leader. So we all get together. There was like 170 of us on a Teams call. They all just join. You can join if you want to. You don't have to. But we had like three people show an AI tool and how they're using it to make their job easier. people in that call were eating that up. They were like, we want more of this. So to me, the reason why I put that column is to close that gap of adoption versus making it real in your life. So that would be my example that I just saw recently. That's my muddy boots. I saw this yesterday. I saw where actual people doing the actual job aren't just talking theory from an executive level. They're saying, hey guys, go to your Outlook. Here's how you can integrate Claude into your Outlook, and here's what it can do, and here's how. And so everybody was just eating that up, and I thought that was phenomenal. So when you were talking, that helped me understand that's a way to, one way. I'm not sure if it's the right way, but that's one way that we're trying to bridge that gap.
Well, actually, let's take that one step further, actually, okay. Honestly, in the context of this conversation and sort of this question, because if you peel the layers back, the leaders who are able to build genuine alignment in the age of AI, especially now, really should do two things. Number one, first and foremost, they need to create clarity about what is changing. Okay, it is literally the job of a leader to effectively close that gap between here's what we're doing, here's where we're why we're doing it, here's the expectation from you, and then here's what might happen if we actually don't do the thing, if we don't embark on this journey. Because people are not resistant to change. They're resistant to being forced to change without context. Okay? So when they understand the why and the stakes, most of us actually lean in, but you've got to give us the clarity to think of it in the same manner that you do, leaders.
Brilliant. You're right. It's not, I'm taking so many notes. You should have told me I was going to take so many notes. Keep going.
So that's the first thing. So they got to be clear about what is changing. Here's the thing. And this is perhaps even, I will argue, more important than the first point, which is they have to create clarity about what is not changing. We all need an anchor for stability. Do you remember, what was that movie? Office Space.
Okay.
Like 26 years ago. Did you ever see that?
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember. It was so long ago. Yeah.
Do you remember the guy that got demoted and got moved to the basement? He didn't really care about any of the reorg or any of that nonsense.
Yeah.
The only thing he cared about was...
What happened? What was going to happen to him?
No, his red stapler.
Oh, that's... I forgot about the red...
Do you remember that?
Not a red stapler. I don't remember this show as much, Matthew.
Yeah. So anybody who's watching this, I think, you know... So all he cared about was to keep his red stapler.
Okay.
Yes, we are all adults and we all need, but at the same time, we all need our emotional support red stapler.
Okay.
We need something that grounds us. We need something that represents stability for us in the middle of all this chaos that we're experiencing right now. Okay. So the best leaders explicitly name what is stable. What is not changing? Like, your role matters. Your expertise still counts. And here's what stays the same while we are together going on this journey and evolving at the same time. So you've got to be clear about what is changing. And you've also got to be, even more importantly, be clear about what is not changing.
Beautiful. And I think, I have seen so many conflicts in the office space. It doesn't matter what company. I get an opportunity to see several companies, but I think it's on that number two. I think it's like I start seeing it based on the person's personality style, right? Everybody has a different personality style. Some people thrive in a little more chaotic world. Some people need things to be a little bit stable, but both of them, the reason why there was so much conflict is because they were not sure on where the anchor was. They were not sure. And so you said that beautifully. So if you're listening today and you're starting to see people start getting uncertain, you start seeing turnover because people are like, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm going to go jump ship and go somewhere else. You'll start seeing internal conflicts. And then to Matthew's point and what he lived for is, you start seeing it in the outcomes and the measurable outcomes because people start focusing on the wrong things and they can't focus on the right things because there's no anchor. And I use you do a beautiful job of painting these pictures for us, and I just see a ship out, and it's just, you know, flailing around. It's still a ship, right? Nice. It's still beautiful, yes. But it's just flailing around because there is no anchor. I think you hit the nail on the head with that one for sure. Okay, let me go to another one. You ready for it? Well, you're just answering them, and I'm liking this. Okay.
I love these questions. These are just
so, you know, everything's about
so
this
on
shift,
point.
This shift, and this is the world you live in. Oh my gosh, if Amazon can't do it, who can? Seriously. So, leaders struggle with balancing. So, there's innovation with their day to day things that they have to do, right? Like you said, everything's shifting. They're trying to keep people calm in this world of AI. They're trying to learn it themselves. They're trying to do all these things. How do leaders work through these struggles of turning this innovation into outcomes?
This question. and honestly, we can pretty much end this after this. This is the real question, folks. That's it. It stops here. After this, there's nothing else to explore at all. Okay. So, what an amazing question. So, I see this all the time, Melissa. The thing is, organizations that struggle are precisely the ones that, in a way, treat innovation on one side as a separate activity from the day-to-day operations on the other side. There used to be a time when companies created, innovation teams
hubs. They used to have
hubs.
I'm with you.
Hubs or centers for digital excellence or whatever. Okay. I'm going to be brutally honest about it. Those were fancy names that in effect virtue signaled that we are a forward-looking organization. That was it. That was the entirety of those names. Here's the thing. Nobody cares. That's not a real thing anymore. Because now everybody can innovate. Everybody can bring value. And perhaps at a scale that is unprecedented. So the question really isn't, how do we prioritize innovation while we still have our day jobs? That's not, who cares? That's not a thing. Instead, it's more about how does innovation help us with our day-to-day business priorities? That's really, that's how we should focus on this. I got a couple other things about that, but what do you think about?
I'm just thinking every time, because this is the mud puddle, we're talking about real life situations here, right? You've got your boots on. I don't know if you have cowboy boots on or rubber boots on. I might have to get you some cowboy boots. But
running shoes.
I saw a frontline agent trainer, right? It's been a long time since I have seen that level of leadership. But I saw a frontline in a contact center environment. Let's talk about a contact center environment. I saw a frontline just recently, agent trainer. It was one client. He had one little team he was working with, 20-something people. And he showed me some new technology he created for those agents to learn better. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
He picked up the phone and contacted us and said, I want to showcase this to the executive team because I want to show you that we're not just waiting for innovation to come to us. We're bringing it to our day-to-day. And that just made me think about what you said. The mindset is, how can I be innovative in my day-to-day job? And I was really happy to see that. And that's what you're saying. It's not a hub anymore. It's not a club. It used to be a cool club so that company could look like they're innovators for the future. Your brutal honesty is right up my alley. You guys know I like to speak it straight and to the truth. It's a virtue signal for a forward-looking company, and that's not the case anymore. You don't need a hub. You don't need 10 people to apply to be your innovators. You need everybody being innovators, or you're basically going to die. That's pretty much what's going to happen here. So that's kind of what came to my mind when I heard you talk.
The message is received. So thank you. So that's exactly right. So here's the thing. I think what was in your question? I think you said something like what separates the organizations that adapt successfully or something like that?
Yeah. How can they balance it? Yeah. Howard, it says leaders struggle balancing innovation with day-to-day business priorities. What separates companies that adapt scale from those struggling to turn ideas into outcomes?
Okay. So I'll say two things. And then I'm really interested as to hear what you think of these two ideas. Okay. So number one, the organizations that successfully scale these things are the ones that fund solutions to problems, not technology. Okay. I'm going to say this again. These organizations do not fund technology. They fund solutions to their problems. So for example, they don't start with, hey, let's implement some cool AI stuff. Okay. They start with, what are most expensive operational problems? Or what's the biggest complaint our customers have? Or what's the largest blocker we are facing right now? Maybe it's tech debt. Maybe it's a complicated manual process that needs to be automated. Maybe it's, you know, perhaps a decision that takes, I don't know, weeks to months to make, where it should literally take only hours. So they kind of have to work backwards from that problem to a solution from that perspective. So we've all heard the saying, and I'm going to say it, Melissa, see if you have heard this. Almost all business problems come down to three things. Do you know?
Okay. What are they?
People process technology.
Technology. Yeah. People process.
We've
technology.
All heard this.
Right? Yeah.
And it was true before the age of AI. It's even more true now. Sometimes the right solution is technology in the form of AI. Sometimes it's a process that has to be automated. Sometimes it's people, which in a weird way, it really translates into like culture or leadership. But you start with from the problem, not from the shiny new tool. So that's number one. And then number two, these successful organizations measure things really well. And they measure them differently from everybody else. Okay? What do I mean by that? They don't just measure the output of the technology. They measure whether the business capability actually changed. Are we able to make faster decisions? Did our customer experience actually improve? Did our cost structure actually shift? Because that way, you're not celebrating a pilot project that demos really, really well and it looks really super cool, but never goes into production, because all these AI projects, especially these days, that never make it to real production environments, they share two things. Number one, they're not solving a real business problem. And number two, they're not scalable. That's pretty much it. So you've got to fund, you've got, your money has to go where the solution to your problems are. And then you're going to have to measure the effectiveness of those programs. That's what successful orgs do.
You were right when you said this is it. This is it. You said three things. That was two. Did you have a third one to add
one?
Okay.
Nope. I combined. Right. I had it in my head and I combined it with the second.
Okay. Wow. I need to prove to you that I'm taking like major notes in red here.
That's a lot of notes.
I went from blue ink to red ink. You know what I'm saying? And you don't have to do that in the age of AI. I know there's technology you can use.
I got different color pens here.
Oh, look at you. See, we're visual. I knew we were going to be attached when I saw the different color post-it notes. I'm like, we're thinking. You know, I want everybody to hear this, and I'll just say it in a Texas way, right? You keep pushing the technology and you're not fixing the problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You keep herding the cows in the pen and the fence is torn down. All right. So I don't know how else to say what Matt's saying so beautifully is that if any tool that your company, your leaders want to showcase, if it's not solving a problem, it's wasting time. That's about as simple. Some people want to show us how super smart they are, and they have 45 AI tools. And we saw this, Matt, just the people who are getting the traffic at some of these shows are the technology companies, right? What tool are they offering? You and I saw that even in Phoenix. the people that were going to the booths or what shiny tool do you have? And it's not solving a problem. And honestly, you said you want to know what I think about that. Well, I think about all the diet solutions in the world to get you healthy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And some 100%. Of these are so, the fad diets that were out there, you guys probably remember there's so many fad diets that are out there, but they're just fad. They're not solving a problem. And when someone actually gets healthy for longevity, those are the types of diet. Those are the types of lifestyles you want to change. And I think that that's what I think about, Matt, when you say that. Like, we're looking for things that actually solve a problem.
There's a huge difference between show me some cool stuff and wow me with some shiny new objects versus, okay, I've got it. Is it really helping me?
So when everyone is like going, when you're going to look at an AI tool from here on out, make sure that you don't look at a tool unless you realize what your problem is first, what it's trying to solve.
You got
to
define the problem.
Okay. Begin. I think we even heard begin with the end in mind, right? A good friend of mine, his name was Mike Satterfield, and he said, great leaders, Matthew, are the ones that have a solution. They're just waiting on the problem. And boy, wasn't that a mindset switch? Like you're sitting there waiting. You like have a solution in you, but you're waiting on the problem to come to you. Right. And so I think that's such a great mindset switch. All right. Well, speaking of mindset shifts, I'm going to just ask this closing question. I know you've just killed it with all of these answers and you got to come back to the mud puddle. You willing to come back to the mud puddle with me?
I would love to.
All right. So when we talk about a mindset shift, you always talked about, you already answered in the first question a little bit about a mindset shift or a habit. But what would you say is the single most important mindset shift or a habit that a leader needs to take right now when they leave this podcast? What can they do, Matthew, right now?
Oh, my God. Okay. Two things.
Okay.
I will take back what I said earlier in that we can close it. After the previous question, we can close it after this one, because this is truly it. The mindset shift is for leaders is stop leading from answers and start leading from questions. What do I mean by that? Most leaders, we all know this, got to the position that they're in by performing above bar at their previous jobs when they were like individual contributors. You know, they were the experts in their fields. They were high performers. They had all the answers. So then what happens? The organization recognizes their contribution and says, hey, this person is really good at their job and what they do. Maybe we should promote them so that the broader company can benefit from their expertise. That's how it goes. Now, a lot of times, these folks get promoted from their individual contributor jobs to a manager, like a leadership position, with no regard from the organization to whether this is even a good fit for them. Just because I'm a good developer doesn't mean I'm going to be a good developer manager. And then number two, we hardly ever give these people any leadership training. Hardly ever. So I'll get off my soapbox now. Anyway, they were good at their jobs and they had all the answers. But now, who cares? With AI, everybody has answers. Everybody can perform at a really high bar level. Everybody can innovate. The advantage that got the current leaders in their current leadership chairs right now is no longer a reasonable expectation for them to be sitting in that chair anymore. AI is creating capabilities that didn't exist before. So, and if a leader's primary perspective or value to the team or to the organization is still, I know more than my team and my people, and I can help in ways that they don't know, they've exactly become the bottleneck that they were once promoted or appointed by the company that they promoted them.
Okay.
The one mindset shift is stop being the person with the answers. You don't have them anymore. Everybody else also has them. Start being the person who creates the conditions and the environment where the best answers naturally find their way to the surface, regardless of where it came from or who brought them. That's the mindset shift.
You and I are so passionate about the same thing. We're so, and even
yeah, when I was like too animated. Sorry, I was a little.
No, not a bit. That it brings me back to the very front when Dr. Swami says, "Why not?" And he said, "Relentlessly curious."
Yes.
Relentlessly curious, Dr. Swami. Matthew needs a raise because he's helping spread your message. In case you're listening here, okay, I'll call Swami. Just text me his number.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
But relentlessly curious, the relentlessly curious one, that mindset to find, like, let the best answer surface. You said that so beautifully. That's a mindset shift. And that's scary for some people because they had the answers, and you're so right. I love that you are so bold and blunt. I really think that you must be a Texas brother I never met. But that saying, hey, you used to have all the answers, like, because that's what got you in this position. But hey, guess what? They can pull them up and get them in 10 seconds or less now. Everybody has the answers. And Matt, that is so powerful and so truthful. And that's what this Muddy Boots podcast is for. It is for truth and action, not theory. It's not about the people that want to talk, you know, talk. I grew up that there were two kinds of people. Talkers and doers. My mom didn't have a leadership, degree, but she did have calluses on her hands. And that's exactly what you have, Matt. You've come in here and shown us these are not theories. These are not, I think it might work. This is coming from a man who has obviously made mistakes and had worked through those mistakes, and someone who has seen things that work. I thank you for your time. This has been absolutely game-changing from a leadership level. I appreciate your insights, and you have so much more to share. Any closing words you have before we stop by this
together? Thank you so much for this opportunity. It was really good to get to talk to you again. Like we both said, we met for the first time, and it was really brief, and we kind of hit it off, and
yeah,
we just had that connection. I feel like we think and, you know, kind of do the same sort of similar things. Our hearts and minds are in the same place. It was so good to talk to you today.
Thank you, Matthew. You know, we said M&M, we're going to have to go on a road show together.
Wait, you know what? We're going to have to find a way to
we'll have
That's
to do
still
that.
On the table.
That's still on the table. We have to do that. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for just being so generous with your knowledge.
So that we can really
multiply your greatness. I'll see you later. Thanks again, Matt.
Truly appreciate it. Take care.